The Moody Blues are coming to the main stage of Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York on Thursday night. That's April 5th at 8 o'clock. Since the 1960s, as part of the historic original British invasion of supergroups, the Moody Blues have lit up the hearts and minds of rock fans with inspiring anthems like Nights in White Satin, Tuesday Afternoon, and I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band. It's a great pleasure to have Justin Hayward, the lead singer of the Moody Blues, with us this morning as they embark on their 32-city The Moody Blues, The Voyage Continues Highway 45 tour in conjunction with the 45th anniversary of their landmark album, Days of Future Past. And again, we welcome Justin Hayward to the roundtable this morning.
Great pleasure. Thanks for your call. Yeah.
Well, it's very nice to have you with us. So you are in the midst of a 32-city tour. The Voyage Continues, Highway 45, in conjunction with the 45th anniversary of the landmark album Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you to say, okay, let us commemorate in some way this accomplishment?
Well, I think we were looking, you know, first of all, we were looking at the single, and we were looking at some artwork to do with the single of Nights in White Satin, which came out in 67, the same year. And then that got us onto the 45, and then we realized that the 45 was the number of years since Days of Future Past, and so many people had mentioned this anniversary, and so we just thought it was a good sort of title to hang on to the tour, and it's given us a chance to talk about the album and re-highlight the album with Universal. And there's a remastered version of it out that came out a couple of years ago. So it just seemed like a good title for the tour and to focus on that record when promoting it.
When you look at that album now of Days of Future Past, does an anniversary or help in a reverence for it, or have you always felt that?
I don't know. It's a reverence for it because at the time, I have to say, in truth, it was a series of wonderful accidents. The idea, it would be nice to say it was all a kind of Moody Blues plan,
right,
and we thought it all out, but nothing could be further from the truth. It was the idea of an independent guy called Michael Decker Barclay, who came to Decca with the idea. And it was made as a demonstration stereo record. It was Peter Knight's idea to do orchestral versions between our songs, which we'd already recorded, and to do the orchestral versions of those songs and to link it together in that way. And it was a really fortunate kind of accident. I thought, in truth, we were making a kind of arty album that would have a very limited appeal, and I might, if I was lucky, meet some really intelligent girls at a cocktail party for The Guardian or The Observer newspapers in London. And that was about as far as I thought, really. So the whole thing really took me by surprise. I think what changed in people's idea of the album was that when they could hear it in stereo, and stereo was just really beginning in the UK in radio, but and of course when we arrived in America in 1968 with that album, it was just perfect for those late night jocks and who were looking for that kind of album material to play, and I think that was a big turning point for us.
And you still got to meet the girls at the cocktail party.
I did, you know, and we did. I remember not long after Days of Future Past, we did a gig with the Indo Jazz, a group called Indo Jazz Fusions, which was John McLaughlin and Ravi Shankar and some really hip people, and at the Sadler's Wells Theatre, and my parents were there, and I thought, well, this is it. You know, this is it. There weren't many people, but many punters, but the intelligentsia were there, and that was wonderful.
And then, of course, Nights in White Satin takes on a life of its own, right? I mean, and that did that come as a surprise at all when you look at the work on that album?
I think we recorded that well before we recorded the album, and we recorded it for the BBC, first of all, and we heard it in our van when we were going up north, just driving, because we recorded it for a program called Saturday Club, a pop program. And we stopped the van and listened to it, and that's the first time we thought, hey, there's something about that song and about that recording. And it wasn't until about 6 months later we got to record it for Decca. But I think we suffered from the American view that it would never be a single. And, of course, in the U.S. it wasn't. They chose Tuesday Afternoon as the single. And only really by pressure of airplay did they put out Nights in White Satin later on. But it's a curious thing. I mean, I wrote it when I was 19 years old, and to try and reflect on that few minutes in my life in a bed sitting room in West London is, you know, it is an odd thing to have to do regularly. But we were in Australia, just like, this is quite amusing, where we're in Australia just recently, and doing, Graham and I were doing this radio show live, broadcast all over Australia. And the guy said to me that, hey, what's that Nights in White Satin, what's all that about? And so I said, well, I was at the end of, it's the random thoughts of a young 19-year-old kid, you know, I was at the end of one love affair, beginning of another. And he said, I don't know about that, man, but that record scared me. That was a creepy record. He said, when I was 7 years old, that scared the hell out of me. I thought, that's an interesting twist on it, really. And he said, I never knew. It was like a mystery to me, man, that I couldn't, and the sound, there was nothing on the record. And I said, no, you're right. It was no double tracking, just a lot of echo. It was kind of spooky. And I could see that side of it, too. But it has a life, and it's wonderful to be able to go anywhere in the world and sing a song, and people will recognize it and enjoy it.
Do you ever think about the lasting power of something that you did when you were 19 years old, and then you look, okay, 45 years later, and older and wiser, and perhaps writing and doing better things than you ever did as a kid, but that is still what is so resonant in people's minds.
Well, I know what you mean. There's a naivety in youth that allows you to do that kind of stuff without any fear, and that's the difference. If you've got no fear and no money, it's a very different world. But and I hope it's kind of replaced by a wisdom as we get older. But it certainly leads us to take probably less risks. I think I'm doing a lot of stuff now. I've recorded a lot of stuff, and I hope it'll come out either as a solo album, or if the mood is, if the other guys want to pay for it or something like that. But it'll certainly, I hope, see the light of day. But I think it's the best stuff I've ever done. But that's completely subjective, and I don't try to analyze that too much. I think the best time really for me with records and songs was probably the 80s with Wildest Dreams and I Know You're Out There Somewhere. To have a hit, hits again when you're old enough to appreciate it. And curiously enough, that's the bulk of our audience, live audience, is from that time. It's they're the people that have stayed with us.
What do you attribute the longevity to?
I think it's because we went our own way. We chose our own road. We were very lucky in those early years with Decca that they didn't give us much money, but they gave us studio time. This is the days when record companies had big studios, and we would take time at all hours, you know, of the day and night, wherever we could get it, and weekends when most other people wouldn't work. I mean, Nights was recorded on a weekend, on a Saturday morning, and Question likewise, just because there was free time. But I think that, you know, that's how it's changed. It is the fact that we were able to do that, and after that, really, really, you know, after Decca, we started to meet the A&R guys who said this is what you should really be doing, and all of that kind of stuff. But I think in through all of it, we've tried, even if it's cost us dear sometimes, to go our own way, and to just do the satisfaction in music is doing what you want to do. And, you know, it's nice to have a lot of input from other people, but it's most satisfying when you've done it your own way.
The Moody Blues will be on the main stage at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York, Thursday night. It's April 5th at 8 o'clock. Justin Hayward, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you and all the guys all the best, and thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure.
Oh, not at all. Looking forward to coming back. You know, there's something in the show for everybody. It's a two-hour show. Something there from every album. We look forward to seeing everybody there.
Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Great pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, the Moody Blues at Proctor's on Thursday night, April 5th at 8 o'clock. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before.